deadly sins, seven ways to win, seven holy paths to hell, and your trip begins. Seven downward slopes, seven bloodied hopes, seven are your burning fires, seven your desires.
Seven deadly sins, seven ways to win, seven holy episodes of the Iron Maiden podcast. Hello, welcome Iron Maiden fans to the seventh episode of a seventh episode. I'm happy to join you. My name is Sean Muse, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Rowan. Welcome.
The seventh episode, indeed it is, and I am excited as hell to do this one because I really love this album. So I think all in all, this is going to be a really kick-ass episode to start off with. So, it's been a while since, you know, we've done an episode. So how have you been, Sean?
Actually, things have been going terrific. For anybody that is new, my name is Sean Muse. I am the lead singer and founder of the Iron Maiden tribute band Run to the Hills, which is very active in the Northeast United States. And since we've talked, Rowan, things have really been heating up, lots of events being booked for the end of this year. And as we go into 2011, we're just talk of us partnering up with a magnificent tribute band to Ronnie James Dio. We're going to be doing an extended tour of events to benefit the Ronnie James Dio Cancer Foundation. So lots going on. Of course, the new album has been out for a bit now, and we've actually learned three of them as a band, and we're going to start playing those live next week. So for those of you that are Maiden fans, especially here in the United States, just go to Facebook. I would recommend to look us up, look it up as Run to the Hills Iron Maiden Tribute Band. And then when you go on there, like us and suggest to friends. It's always appreciated. And for all of you throughout the world that have been asking us to play, no problem. We'll just jump on a plane and get right on over wherever you want us to play. We're always happy to be of service to you. How you been, my friend?
Well, I've been terrific. Actually, I've had my exams, so I was a bit busy with that. That was the reason, actually, we couldn't do episodes. But other than that, I've been, you know, kind of brilliant. And I was waiting for the 18th so that we could do this episode. And, you know, I was really excited about it. So I've been good, been listening to a lot of Iron Maiden again, and also to a few new albums that are out. Also on this episode, I would like to announce that Sean and I are actually going to create a new podcast, and this one's called Headbangers In. So we're going to basically just talk about, this podcast is all metal. So if you're a metalhead and, you know, you enjoy metal and, you know, any form of metal for that matter, I'm telling you, you're going to love this podcast. So it's going to be Sean Muse again, and me, Rowan Pereira. We're going to do this podcast together, and I think we're going to have lots of fun doing it because metal is generally a great subject to converse on. So, you know, we've got loads of stuff to talk about, and we have loads of episodes coming up. So I'm really excited for the future. Also, moving back to Iron Maiden, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, Maiden's seventh album, the first album on which they used keyboards and guitar synthesizers. Somewhere in Time being the first one in which they used guitar synthesizers, but keyboards being used for the first time on Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. A very different side of Maiden that we got to see since Powerslave, because Powerslave especially was such a, you know, a raw, heavy album which sounded terrific, and then they came out with Somewhere in Time, where they used guitar synthesizers and moved to a completely different sound. And some of the songs on that album are brilliant. But then when they came out with with Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, I mean, it took the cake, because it was definitely a brilliant album. All fans, I think, weren't particularly attracted to Seventh Son as they were to the earlier albums, due to the new sound. And that's always been an issue with fans, who prefer to have, you know, some of the older fans like the older sound from the first four or five albums. So, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, you know, having a slightly different sound along with Somewhere in Time. So that created a difference in opinion, basically. So, although I think it was really good, the songwriting on this album is fantastic. I love the sound, and everything on this album is good. But unfortunately, this was also Adrian Smith's last album with a band. So we're going to go into a basic overview of the album, which Sean is actually going to give you. So, Sean, go ahead.
Okay, well, as you might know, Michael Kenney, the Count, made his premiere in the album. This album was a return to happiness for Mr. Bruce Dickinson. For all you fans, as you know, during the Somewhere in Time era, he was not the very happy camper. They had just come off the brutally long Powerslave tour, and unfortunately, the ideas Bruce had for Somewhere in Time were not happening for the rest of the band. They rejected it, and he was very unhappy. He felt like a squashed bug, to quote him, and he actually contemplated quitting the band and music altogether at that point, because he was very burnt out. So when Seventh Son rolled around, the ideas he had were definitely received well with the band, and he was heavily involved. So the band was back to feeling like they're all working as a team again. And the thing about it from a production standpoint, just a little behind the scenes, as you talked about, Rowan, they introduced keyboards. But another thing that needs to be discussed, and this was actually a big issue of controversy here in the States, was Martin Birch's decision to use a more processed sound for the guitars. Because historically, they were using, although they did use some synthesized sounds on the guitars in Somewhere in Time, there still was that heavy Marshall crunch to the guitars with a lot of gain. And his decision to use the process sound was actually a big hit. For some reason, it was a big hit throughout the world, except for in the United States, the sound was actually interpreted as making Maiden sound, if you will, a little tamer to a lot of the metal fans. And I think one of the reasons for that is recently, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, 88. By then, some really heavy bands had come to the forefront over here. Metallica, Anthrax, Slayer. I mean, there's a whole host of bands that were really aggressive sounding, and Maiden came out with a very finessed sounding sound on the album, and to the point where a lot of people feel that if they had that raw Marshall sound, the album would have been received better over here. Now, here's the funny thing. These days, now, Rowan, you can relate to this perhaps, a lot of fans between, I'm going to say ages, well, from early age all the way up through their 20s, are huge fans of the Seventh Son album. As a matter of fact, for a lot of them, it's their favorite album. And we started noticing that as a band a while back. Now, I've always liked the album a lot. I actually would have preferred a rawer sounding mix on the guitar to give. But again, it's a beautiful record that they put together. And definitely listening to it now, you can hear the finesse. And Adrian Smith, of course, was very, very happy with the direction they were moving in. So I just wanted to kind of throw that in there real quick, because it's one of those cases where the United States, for some reason, had a different reception to this album than the rest of the world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, absolutely. I think the initial reception for the album in itself, I mean, generally, I would say it wasn't really great, because there were, again, like you mentioned earlier, the decision to use guitar synthesizers and keyboards didn't really go down well. So I think it wasn't just a United States opinion. In fact, many Maiden fans were kind of disappointed with, you know, the type of production on this album, especially keyboards, which they felt wasn't very metal. So on that note, I think the album didn't, you know, go down well with all of the fans. But then again, I think it's still a good album. This album, I think, would sort of be like, you know, this album could probably relate to Brave New World and, you know, some of the newer Maiden albums since Bruce's reunion with the band. Because this album back then was what these albums are now. They aren't very well accepted by the band. And, you know, hopefully with time, I guess these albums will be accepted because they are classics. In fact, many of the songs on the newer albums are brilliant and classics. But, you know, staying away from the newer albums and back to Seventh Son, I think as of now, this album in itself is very well received. You know, I think it's with time that people have developed liking to this album. So, especially, you know, some of the songs that are played live, especially The Evil That Men Do and Can I Play With Madness are really, really big fan favorites. Although there are a couple of other songs on this album which I would really like to hear live also. So, you know, we'll actually move on to the track listing and, you know, just take the tracks one by one. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the first song on it, Moonchild, is the best song on the album. As a matter of fact, we've played Moonchild a lot over the last several years. The album as a whole has a very gothic feel to it, which again is very popular amongst fans. Moonchild song is probably the most goth sounding song on the album, in my opinion. It's of course based on Aleister Crowley and, you know, everything that goes along with him. The thing about this is, if you've been to see them, and I think you did too, in their last tour, they were actually doing the intro to this live instead of using the recorded intro like they did on the Seven Sun tour, and I thought that was absolutely incredible. Did you happen to catch that?
Exactly. They played Moonchild, and I still remember Dave playing the acoustic guitar. And I was just sitting and I was like, oh my god, are they going to play Moonchild? Because that's the only album, I think, from the Somewhere Back in Time, you know, World Tour era, you know, those albums which actually had the, you know, acoustic intros on it. So I was pretty sure it was, it was Moonchild. But then again, you know, I was doubting it. So when Bruce actually, you know, started the whole Seven Deadly Sins thing, I was like really happy because I knew it was Moonchild. And, you know, that's, I think, when I went early mad. So, again, I think they played that song after about 20 years or 18 years. So it was a really, really long time for them since they played that song. Because I think the only tour that they did it on was the 7th tour of the 7th tour, if I'm right. So I think, again, like you said, it's a great album opener. I would say I've heard better album openers from Maiden, like especially compared to the older albums. It's a very good album opener nonetheless, but I still think, you know, some of the older album openers are better. This song's got a very unique feel to it, Moonchild, especially it's something that, you know, sort of is very different from the stuff that Maiden generally does. So when I heard Moonchild for the first time, I was kind of on a different dimension. So I think Moonchild is a good way to open the album, but I still think that Maiden have better openers in the past. Anyway, moving to the second song on the album, which is Infinite Dreams. This song is, for me, I think one of the best songs in the album. There's this beauty in this song, which it's really, really hard to express because this song is amazing. The song is basically about a character who sees who has these disturbing visions about the afterlife in his dreams, and he's scared but that he won't be able to wake up again. So that's the whole concept of the song. It was released as a single also. It's a really, really good song that I don't think Maiden have actually played live except for, again, the 7th tour of the 7th tour. And I'd love to listen to this song live because it's a really, really good song. It's very, very well written, the lyrics and the whole feel of the song, the way the guitars come in at the beginning. And, you know, just everything, again, was written by Steve Harris. So I think this is one of the songs that I think, in my opinion, put Seven Son over Seven Son as an album, right up there with, you know, some of the best Maiden albums. Because this album basically has amazing, amazing songs on it. And, you know, Infinite Dreams happens to be one of these. So for me, I think this is one of my favorites from the album, and definitely some brilliant, brilliant song, songwriting again by Steve Harris. So, what's your take?
Well, when they first heard it, and again, this is a long, long time ago, it had to really grow on me. To this day, it's one of those songs that there's a big dividing line between the fans. They either seem to love this song or hate it. It's very quiet. The way I think this song, I don't think there's another song by Maiden that sounds really anything like this. The way it starts and then kind of goes into things. I remember seeing the live version on the tour and then on the Made in England video, and I think when you see the lighting and the mood added into it, it really helps to bring the song to life, and we kind of get that, like you're talking about, the story. It's a terrific story, of course. I think just the way the song opens up, though, for some reason, for those people that just couldn't deal with having any variety, I guess, they didn't take to it. Whereas the ones that liked the progressive elements that Maiden was starting to head into, they put their arms right around this song. So that was kind of the take. And then moving into the, you know, the next song, Can I Play With Madness? Same thing. There was a school of people that thought it was an amazingly catchy song with a terrific chorus and this and that. And then there was a school of people that could not stand the new single that had come out in the video. They felt like it was too arena rock sounding and too watered down sounding. So again, those two songs in particular, for some reason, really had like polar opposite reactions from everyone I knew. I happen to be one of the people that liked the song. Again, my only gripe was I felt that, and again, this, you know, wisdom teaches you a lot of things over the years, but you know, back in 88, I was, I was 19 years old in 1988, so my perspective was a little different. My gripe was, again, the production that I think had a Power Slave type of production, the song might have come across more powerful. I think it's the best, one of the best vocal lines as far as melody lines on the album, but again, it's one of those love it or hate it songs.
Exactly. You know, as you mentioned, I think this album, generally most of the songs in it are actually dividers. You know, some you either like it or you don't like it. I don't think there are fans who'd be like, okay, you know, the song's all right. You either like this album or you don't like it, because it's a completely different style. So I think Can I Play With Madness, on the whole, a really good song, good single. You know, one of the shorter songs that Maiden writes. I like the whole galloping element that it has in it. Good song to hear live. You know, very good audience participation. I wouldn't say it's a very, very good song, one of their best singles, but I wouldn't say it's like one of the best songs in the album, because I generally prefer, you know, the longer songs, and I feel they've got more soul in them, but I think this song's got soul too. But I think you know, this song, I mean, I'm actually kind of bored of hearing it, to be honest. I've heard it so many times. It's on practically every live album, and they do it on almost every tour. So I guess
that song again, never.
Precisely, it's like you hear this song on every album. So I'm sorry, on every live live tour. So
I sing. I think we've done this. Can I Play Madness? I think we've done it. I don't know, maybe about 50 times overall. It's that's more of a studio song. I mean, if you're not dead on perfect with the lead and backing vocals being in sync with each other and so on, it can be a real disaster to play live. I know that from personal experience. And actually, speaking of vocals, I forgot to say this earlier. It should be a mentioning. Bruce did just ridiculous amounts of live touring in the 80s with me. And, you know, when Bruce is healthy, like as you can hear when he joined the band, his voice is the best ever, period. He's still the best ever overall. But from a technical aspect, by the time Seven Son was being recorded, you could definitely hear the wear and tear in Bruce's voice. And you can really, if you catch the tour and you've seen the videos, you can hear a pronounced difference in how his vocals sound in the 1988 versus 82. That's something, just as being someone that worships Bruce Dickinson, my initial reaction when I heard the album was I was a bit disappointed because somewhere in time he still had that really booming sounding voice. It was actually the first one I actually ever got. He had a different vocal sound, a much drier sound, and I think that coupled with, and again, a very understandable fatiguing in the voice, just had a little bit of an impact on how I took the album back then. Now, listening to it now, again, I think that the way they approached the album and the way he did his vocals fit in great with the material. But I'm just going with my initial reaction back then. The Can I Play With Madness single, nice. And I kind of brought that out. I mean, when I heard, I remember seeing the video on MTV, and it was a great video. I mean, you got the character from the Monty Python team in there. Uh-huh. And, I think that's it's a nice way that they kind of lighten things up with that guy in the video. I think the most effective use of his voice on this album for the material is probably on Moonchild, and then the next song, The Evil That Men Do, and probably I'm thinking The Prophecy and Clairvoyant. Those two songs, his vocals sound terrific on those in particular. But The Evil That Men Do, which I think, and I could be wrong, I can't remember if it was the second or the third single or video that was released, the consensus is this is one of the strongest songs from the album. This is much less of a polar dividing song, meaning the general consensus is people like this song a lot. Thing about this is the cool thing is if you watched it live, and I think you've seen it on video, Bruce does that funny balancing act on the monitors when he's singing it. And for some odd reason, that actually adds even more to the song if you see it live. That's a great example of how his physical acting and charisma and stage performing can take an already good song and just completely transform it into an experience.
Uh-huh. I agree with you on that part, actually. It's part of the stage performance that Maiden, have to offer, which is really great, and it's very entertaining. Again, now this song is a brilliant song on the album. Very well placed, I think, right after Can I Play With Madness. The song's basically based on Antony's speech, who was a character in Caesar, in the Shakespeare play, Julius Caesar. And he used this while addressing the crowd, where his exact lines were the good that men do is often dirt with their bones, but the evil that men do lives on. So I guess this is from where the title's been taken. Again, it's a very good song. I think the best live version that I've heard of this is in Rock and Rio. I really enjoyed that version, and it's got that version was really, really good as their live version. I've heard different versions of it also, but different live versions of it. But I think Rock and Rio took the cake. It was definitely one of their best live performances. The whole Eddie coming out during the song and everything. So that was a great performance. Also, this song has some really good melodies, and it has again that perfect blend of melodies and those galloping riffs. So that again gives it that typical Maiden stamp. Also, I just wanted to mention a pretty cool fact about about Can I Play With Madness, which is the song Can I Play With Madness was originally based on a ballad which was written by Adrian Smith, which was On the Wings of Eagle.
I just wanted to do that in harmony with you.
Uh-huh. I think we got that in harmony.
Amigos!
Again, I think some pretty cool songwriting by Adrian Smith on this album also. So, all in all, like you said, The Evil That Men Do. I think the best part that I love about this song is the way the song is arranged, and the blend that it has, which is a perfect blend. It's like a Maiden blend. Those heavy galloping riffs in the chorus, and then those amazing melodies which the crowd can sing along with. So, I think that's a good that's a really, really good song on the album. Again, well placed, like I mentioned before. Moving on, we have Seven Son of a Seven Son, the title track of the album. And I think this is, you know, another favorite of mine from the album. Brilliant, brilliant song. I love this song. It's got some of those classic Maiden elements, like, you know, those little bass passages and, you know, in the middle of the song that we see on Sign of the Cross and Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. So I like that. And especially the melodies and solos, you know, the axe attack towards the end, that's brilliant. I love those solos, and especially the melodies towards the end are absolutely brilliant. So on the whole, this was a really, really good song. Very well written. Again, just written by Steve Harris himself. Longer songs, always written by Steve Harris. And I think he's done a really, really good song. I really enjoyed this song. And I think, again, they never play this song live. I don't know why. I wish I could see some of these songs live. I wish they did a tour where they would just play Seven Son of a Seven Son, the entire album. I think that would be the best. So, unfortunately, they never play this song live. So it's another great song on the album, one of my favorites.
Are we talking about Seven Son of a Seven Son?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. No, they played that on their tour.
Which tour? I mean, yeah, they played on the Seven Tour of a Seven Tour, but they never played it after that.
Oh, yeah, after that. Well, that's because it's a, you know, 75-minute song. No, I'm just kidding. It's a great song. This song probably would have been better placed if they put it on the end of the album, though, to kind of tie in with the epic songs being, you know, usually at the tail end of an album. Recently we reviewed the new album, and I talked about the beginning of one of the songs reminding me a lot of the Seven Son of a Seven Son song, and the Isle of Avalon. Remember the how we talked about that at the beginning of that?
Exactly.
I actually preferred it much to the Seven Son of a Seven Son song. But the cool thing about this is the song, it's like you said, it's an epic song. The favorite part is the when they go, they break into the part with the hi-hat, and it, you know, goes, you know, you get the guitars going, you know, all that good stuff.
Uh-huh.
And again, it, lucky me, I was there on the tour, seen him a bunch of times on that tour, and this is one of those things where you, when you have the lights and the fog and, you know, I remember a light was shining up on Bruce's face. And again, fortunately, there's the Made in England video that catches all this. It's a good way to really soak the whole thing in when you see the visual tied in with the song itself. On its own, the song, it's one of those songs that I don't think you're going to see played again. It's a good song, but it doesn't transcend the tour. And there's a bunch of Iron Maiden songs that they'll play because they put out the album, they're on tour for it, and it won't make it to another tour because either it's too long or it's just not quite enough. It's not popular enough with the fans. And this is definitely one of those songs.
Well, let's say optimistic about that. I mean, we didn't think they would play Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner now, did we? But they did. And I just hope I get to hear, you know, some of these songs live. Especially Infinite Dreams, this, The Prophecy, and the, you know, I heard the Clairvoyant live. So I just wish I would get to hear Infinite Dreams and Seven Son of a Seven Son from the South. That would be really great.
Maybe you could start a movement to a worldwide campaign for Maiden to play.
If they announce a Bombay show next year, and if I'm going to be at the show, then I definitely get a chance to meet them. And when I do, I'm going to beg Steve Harris to play the song, or to include it in the set list, whatever. I just want to hear the song live. It'll be really good.
It's way better live, by the way, than it is on the album.
Uh-huh, yeah. I really enjoy live, especially when I saw it on Made in England. So I really like the way it was played live. Moving on to the next song on the album, which is The Prophecy. This song is, I think, one of the best songs on the album, which I actually, you know, really crave to hear live, but unfortunately Maiden have never done the song live. Prophecy is an amazing, you know, example of Maiden's songwriting skills, of, you know, just everything, the composition of the song, the structure of the song, and even the lyrics, just absolutely brilliant. And again, this song is directly related to the theme of the album, which is about a clairvoyant who, you know, possesses unique powers. And anyway, The Prophecy, it starts off with this really slow intro, really beautiful melody, and then, you know, it goes bang right into the bass line, which has got this really cool thumping bass line. So that makes the song in itself very cool. A very catchy song again, and you know, Bruce hitting some really, really awesome notes on, especially on the chorus. So I think this is definitely one of, you know, the best songs on the album, which clearly doesn't get the recognition it deserves. Really great song. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I agree, absolutely. The thing about the song is, I remember the first time I listened to it when it came out, this is probably the most successful use of how they chose to do the production on the album. And what I mean by that is that the sound on the guitars, for example, and so on, it really lends itself well to this song. And I remember catching that acoustic outro at the end of the song. I thought that was awesome too. And probably within the top three in the album, as far as like Bruce's singing and, you know, how he goes about it, I would say this one, and then the song following it would probably be the best, the best direction type of tunes for this album that they were trying to do, as far as the mix of it working out well and so on. Because the Prophecy, it is a shame they've never played it live. And actually, come to think of it, the tribute band has never played it live either. And now I'm wondering why, because that's a great song. And that kind of leads us to the next song, which is The Clairvoyant, which we've done, of course, and Maiden did on the tour. What people have always said about this song is they really like the bass intro that's on it. It's actually one of the very first, it might be the first, I'm not sure, it's one of the first bass intro type of openings to a song that Maiden did, that kind of started out on this album, on this song. And the lyrics, the as far as the there's a very warm tone on the song as far as the production feel, and the singing is terrific, of course. And of course, if you've seen the video, which I think, if I remember correctly, they took some footage from Donington that year, you can really see in full glory with all the icebergs and everything, the atmosphere of the song they were going for. And The Clairvoyant, of course, talks about The Clairvoyant, which is the centerpiece of the album. And I can say from experience that performing this song is a very fun song to perform. It's kind of tough to sing, but again, it's a much different vocal take than a typical Iron Maiden song. And I think that's kind of reminds me, as far as like 2 Minutes to Midnight off of Power Slave, how that also being a different style makes it especially fun to do and step out of the box once in a while from the norm. That's a terrific song, The Clairvoyant.
Uh-huh. I think it's this song, I think the best part about the song for me would personally be, I think, the intro, which is, you know, the bass line. Very, very cool intro. And I mean, it's just that the intro captivates you. You don't need, you know, you just listen to the intro and you know that this is going to be a great song. So very great, you know, bass line, very cool intro. And then, you know, right bang when the guitars come in and everything, it sounds so cool. The song actually, the latest live version that I heard of it, which was on Flight 666, the original soundtrack, it sounded absolutely great. And again, a really kick-ass solo by Dave Murray on this track in itself. So I think this song is a really great song. Steve Harris actually said that the lyrics to this song was inspired by the death of a psychic by the name of Doris Stokes. So this is, I think, what the lyrics are actually talking about, because what Steve Harris said was, if it was written in this first person point of view, whereas if she could actually foresee the future, couldn't she foresee her own death? So that's what basically the song is based on. It was also released as a single, and it had, I think, The Prisoner Live and Heaven Can Wait live on it. So, and also I think The Clairvoyant in itself live. So again, a very great track on the album. I think, like you said, this, The Prophecy, definitely some of the best tracks in the album. Thing is that we get to hear The Clairvoyant live. We haven't really heard, you know, The Prophecy being played live. But again, Clairvoyant, a really great song. And when I heard it, I really enjoyed it when they played it live. So, really great song, very well placed in the album. Moving to the next song, which is the closer for the album, Only the Good Die Young. This song, I mean, I really like it. but it's I think it'll probably be the least favorite song for me on the album. It's not a bad song, definitely not, but I like certain melodies and, you know, the riff, the chorus, everything about it is, it's not, I wouldn't say it's really, really good material, but it's, some of it is catchy, like I said, and it's, I mean, this song is kind of, I really don't have much to say on this song, because, I mean, the chorus is catchy, it's only the good die young. I mean, I actually really don't have much to say on this song, because I don't really connect to the song as much as I connect to, you know, the other songs on the album. So for me, I think this would be my least favorite song on the album, an okay song to, you know, close the album, compared to, you know, some of the previous albums where you had great closers for it, like Alexander the Great and Crime of the Ancient Mariner, and, you know, and Hallowed Be Thy Name from The Number of the Beast. So, you know, to close the album, Seven Son, with a track like Only to Could Die Young was kind of disappointing. But it's not a bad song. I just say it didn't live up to the expectations that I had. I mean, compared to the other songs in the album. So, what's your take on it?
Well, I echo your sentiment. This is the first album since Killers that Maiden didn't close with a longer epic type of song, because really, the Number of the Beast had Hallowed Be Thy Name, Peace of Mind, To Tame a Land. Then you had Power Slave, of course, with The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. And then on Somewhere in Time, Alexander the Great. So you had four albums, studio albums in a row where, you know, you had this long album closer that, you know, where the band could really stretch out. On this album, the song is really just a typical song. It's not, you know, extended in length. It doesn't embody any fancy intro and whatnot. I said whatnot. I promised myself I wouldn't say whatnot. So everybody out there, just delete that from your podcast so you didn't hear that. The thing about the song is, same here. It never grabbed me. It's not a bad song, of course. It's also not a standout song of any type. And for some people, to this day, the album has never really been considered a standout album. It's been kind of like, certainly the songs sound competent, but they didn't seem to have the hooks for some people to really get them emotionally attached to them. Say, for example, like songs on The Number of the Beast, Peace of Mind, Power Slave, and even Somewhere in Time. And like we said, it's very polarizing because there's other people, and what we're finding is it's actually the next generation of Iron Maiden fans that look to this as their favorite album. So it's funny how different people, different places in time might receive something differently. And to this day, that's what I'm finding. I don't seem to find many people that are in the middle. It's either they really absolutely love this album to death, or they just kind of never really listen to it. And from performing some of the songs on it, I've been fortunate enough to revisit listening to it on a number of occasions, and really overall on the album to this day, I think Moonchild is a seriously heavy song, terrific song to perform live. And other favorites from the album overall, I would have to say The Evil That Men Do certainly has some moments. I think performed in a live setting, that's a very powerful song. And probably, again, going back to what we said just a little earlier, The two songs that seem to match up really well, they're almost like almost like twin brother and sister. You know, one's kind of like the slower pace and one's the more the gallop. But as far as the spirit of the album, I think the best pairing of songs would have to be The Prophecy and The Clairvoyant. And then and the funny thing is this is the last album that Iron Maiden did with Adrian Smith for many years. And you could, I mean, when you go on to the next album, you can see the dramatic shift in how the band sounds, going away from the direction that this album was heading in. And I think a huge part of that was Adrian going away, because they brought in Yannick, of course, and they kind of went back to straight on, you know, metal rock. Excuse me. And then, I remember in '88 catching the tour. You know, Iron Maiden would announce that they're going to take like a year off. So this was kind of like it kind of seemed like just in general, between the album, the tour, and the sentiment, that Iron Maiden, and understandably so, was just flat out tired. And they needed, seriously, to take a nice break to recharge. And I remember they were announcing that. And it was kind of depressing because we all wanted another album to come out right away and continue. And a lot of people were very, you know, disappointed that Adrian, myself included, disappointed Adrian departed after this. And, you know, the other thing, too, we should talk about, you know, there's a terrific live video, you know, made in England that caught their NEC performance. And, you know, that's a nice representation of how the tour looked. I caught, I think, four tour dates myself on that. And the other thing is their B-sides from this. There's some really successful ones. I think my favorite would have to be when they did Massacre, which is an amazing Thin Lizzy song. And that sounds pretty kicking with this. And then, of course, they did updated versions of Prowler and Charlotte the Harlot. Those sound pretty good, too, although I prefer, if I want to hear Bruce singing them, I definitely just throw on Beast Over Hammersmith in 82. Those versions are my favorite. But and then the other thing is, you know, they did, I think, Black Bob Blues and, you know, a couple other trinkets. And that was reissued, of course. I think it was 98. They put them all out. I got the whole, you know, the whole set, the Eddie Head and so on. But those are mixed the same way as the album. And I think there's some live tracks like Infinite Dreams and, you know, Prisoner and so on. So really, this particular CD overall, I would have to say it's never been repeated. It has a unique production. It has a unique approach to the songwriting that before and after has never been duplicated. Although I'd say the brand new CD, The Final Frontier, is a could be a spiritual, you know, it could be a if you will, the son of this album. Although I personally prefer the newest one because, again, I think the production really lends itself to, you know, bringing the power across. But Seventh Son, again, was a very daring CD by Iron Maiden. They were probably really at the peak of their popularity. I mean, they did Donington, which to this day they had a record crowd. And, of course, everyone knows about the unfortunate deaths that happened that day. So it was kind of I would say this would be the close. Well, actually it was the end of the classic lineup of Iron Maiden, as we all remembered it. The last album where you had just the five of them. You know, you had Bruce, Steve, Dave, Adrian, and Nico. And they had been on a run of albums together. Peace of Mind, Power Slave, Somewhere in Time, and this. These four albums really saw Maiden, I would say, arguably creatively, and certainly, you know, in the good old 80s, popularity-wise, at their peak. And That's kind of what people tend to mention. And a lot of people, when they talk about the new stuff, they say, you know, this is the best one since Seventh Son. They kind of leapfrog over the 90s. And again, we've talked about some of the stuff in the 90s, and there's been some high points. But this is really considered the last classic Iron Maiden album. And again, for those of you that have been listening to the newer material for the last 10 years, then, you know, lucky you that you've discovered that there's been some very strong material, terrific production, and again, a lot of which rivals, and in my opinion, surpasses this album as far as just being gone great to listen to.
Oh yeah, I quite agree with you, Ashley, on that part. Seventh Son was actually a departure of, you know, Maiden from the classic era itself, because the next two albums that followed Seventh Son were definitely, I think, in my opinion, weaker albums. And, you know, when Iron Maiden was definitely, I think Seventh Son was sort of like the peak of their career for Iron Maiden. So it sort of went downhill, I guess, a little from Seventh Son. What Steve Harris tried to do was return to some of their, more classic sound that they had on albums like Peace of Mind and Number of the Beast. They tried to do that on No Prayer for the Dying. But I think, you know, everything on No Prayer for the Dying took a backseat, I guess. It wasn't really a great album. But on the whole, I guess Adrian Smith's departure from the band in itself had quite, you know, an effect on how the album sounded. That is No Prayer for the Dying, of course, and even on the songwriting and everything else. So, also, many fans were very disillusioned after Adrian Smith's departure from the band. So, me, myself, being an Adrian fan, I mean, I enjoyed the albums in which Adrian is present more than, you know, the ones that they did with Yannick. So, I think Yannick, and it's, he's a good songwriter, but I would generally prefer Adrian as a songwriter. So also, I think, you know, some of the latter albums, especially after Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, sort of, you know, took a backseat when it comes to songwriting. I think musically the albums were pretty similar because, again, Steve Harris, you know, writes most of Maiden songs. So they sounded kind of the same except for the production, which keeps changing then and again. So, I mean, everything else was the same, which is the slow intros, the gallops, the slow outros and everything. But I think the production keeps changing, you know, based on what the band is looking for. So No Prayer for the Dying there, I think, suffered a little, and so did Fear of the Dark. But I think Seventh Son of a Seventh Son was, you know, the last brilliant album in the 80s era for Iron Maiden. And after that, it sort of went downhill for the band from there. But, you know, on the whole, I guess they recovered. But that's just the future. So basically, like I said, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, a very great album, very strong album, and definitely, you know, it was sort of, you know, disappointing, especially when, you know, they came out with such a terrific album and the albums to follow were a little weaker. So this album in itself, I really enjoyed the first time I heard it itself. So I think this is a really great album. I had a really great time listening to it. And everything on the album is just fantastically composed. Bruce has done a really good, you know, job vocally, you know, compared to the raspiness in his voice, which you heard on No Prayer for the Dying. But anyway, all in all, I think this is a really great album. And I think this is a pretty good episode in itself because I've had quite a good time doing it. So, also, I just want to say that I know it's been a really long while since, you know, we've put an episode out, but it's just been, you know, a really long break for me. So I'm pretty happy to be back and, you know, put this new episode out. And also, we'll be putting episode 8 out really soon, probably in a week or maybe 2 weeks. I'm not promising anything, but we'll definitely
try to get it. we're going to make it up to you, Iron Maiden fans. We have a whole host of episodes coming out very soon. And we've been talking, you know, we're always talking about, hey, what should we do for the next one and the next one and the next one? And the thing we both agree on philosophically is we really try to take the approach of being, well, we are. We're as you can probably tell by now, both Romain and myself are what you consider hardcore Iron Maiden fans. So we're not just looking to do the big broad stroke that you would get on Wikipedia. We're giving you the insider look from a fan's perspective. And also, you know, in some cases, from hanging out with the real band and seeing the tours and this and that, and, you know, performing in a tribute. And, actually, as we finish this podcast, it is Thanksgiving. I don't know if you guys celebrated over there, but United States, that's one of the biggest holidays of the year. So for all of you that celebrate Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to you. This is for you. Sorry, I couldn't resist doing the turkey for you. And I just want to say I am very thankful that anybody listens to this, and I'm very thankful for Rowan because he is a lot of fun. We have a good laugh together during and in between the podcasts, and more is to come for sure. And we have other surprises coming we're going to announce in the near future as well.
I mean, it's really great doing the podcast with Sean again. Like I said, it's been better, actually, since he's joined me as a co-host. So it's been really great fun. We're trying to put as many episodes out as soon as we can, you know, just so that the listeners, because we've got some really great feedback from, you know, some of our fans. Some of them are really eager for the next episode, something which I didn't really expect. So, it's really great to, you know, have dedicated fans to the podcast. And I really want to thank each and every fan out there who's been listening to the podcast, all the Iron Maiden fans. You know, it's been so great doing this podcast. So I think, it's just in itself, I mean, I'm having a really great time doing this. So I just want to thank everyone who's been listening to it, and especially Sean for joining me on every episode. We try to get the episodes out quicker, but unfortunately we couldn't do that for the seventh episode. Like I said, we're taking a break. The break got a little extended. We're going to compensate, and we're going to put out episode 8 quicker than you expect. So stay tuned for episode 8, and this is Rowan Pereira signing off. Up the Irons.
Up the Irons! Slopes, seven bloodied hopes, seven are your burning fires, seven your desires.